Chapter 7. Into the Thick of It. Elaine stepped out of the pavilion after the meeting and entered a grove of a dozen or so trees. And not just any trees. They were towering, healthy, huge-limbed, beautiful trees, hundreds of feet tall with massive trunks. The way she froze and gaped would have been embarrassing if everyone else hadn't been doing the same. She looked to the side, where Egwene stood, mouth open, as she stared up into the huge trees. The sun still shone above, but the green leaves shaded the area, explaining why the light had dimmed inside the tent. "These trees," Perrin said, stepping forward and resting his hand on the thick ribbed bark. "I've seen great trees like this before. Inside a steading." Elaine embraced the source. The glow of Sidar was there, a warmth alongside that of the sun. She breathed in the power, and was amused to notice that most of the women who could channel had done as she had, the moment a steading was mentioned. "Well, whatever Rand is now," Egwene said, folding her arms, "he can't just make steading appear." She seemed to find the thought comforting. "Where did he go?" Elaine asked.
"He strolled out there," Perrin said, waving toward the trees, "and vanished."
People were walking among the massive trunks, soldiers from the various camps staring upward. She heard a Shinaran talking to Lord Agelmar close by.
"We watched them grow, my lord. They burst from the ground. It took less than 5 minutes for them to become so tall. I swear it, my lord, or I may never draw blade again."
"All right," Elaine said, releasing the source. "Let's begin. Nations are burning. Maps.
We need maps."
The other rulers turned toward her. In the meeting with Rand standing there, few of them had objected to her being chosen to lead them. That was how it could be around him. A person was swept up in the tides of Rand's will. Things seemed so logical when he spoke of them. Many now looked displeased to have her put above them. Best to give them no time to dwell on it. "Where is Master Nori?" she said to Dailin. "Could he have—"
"I have maps, Your Majesty,"
Gareth Bryn said as he left the pavilion, Swan at his side. He seemed grayer than she remembered him. He wore a stiff white coat and trousers, the breast marked with the flame of Tarvalin. He bowed in respect, but did not step too close. His uniform made his allegiance plain, as did Swan's protective hand on his arm. Elaine remembered him standing with that same quiet expression behind her mother, never presuming, always protecting the queen. That queen had put him out to pasture. That event hadn't been Elaine's fault, but she could read the breached trust in Bryn's face. Elaine could not change what had come and gone. She could look only to the future. "If you have maps of this area and the potential battlefields presented to us, Lord Bryn, we would love to see them. I would like maps for the area between here and Camelin, a detailed map of Kandor, and your best maps of the other borderland areas." To the rulers she continued, "Gather your commanders and advisors. We must meet immediately with the other great captains to discuss our next course of action." It didn't take long, though the confusion was pervasive, as 2 dozen different factions set to work. Servants pulled open the sides of the pavilion, and Elaine ordered Sumeiko to gather kinswomen and guards to fetch tables and some chairs through a gateway from her camp. Elaine also sent for specific reports of what was happening at the Gap, where Rand had asked the bulk of the Borderlander armies to go and rescue Lan. The rulers and great captains had remained behind for the planning. Shortly, Elaine and Egwene stood surveying Bryn's detailed maps, which had been spread out across 4 tables. The rulers stood back and allowed the commanders to deliberate.
"This is good work, Bryn," Lord Agilmar said. The Shinaran was one of the four remaining great captains. Bryn was another. The final two great captains, Davram Bashir and Rodal Iteralda, stood side by side at the end of another table, making corrections to a map of the western borderlands. Iteralda had bags under his eyes, and his hands sometimes shook. From what Elaine had heard, he had suffered quite an ordeal in Maradon, having been rescued only very recently. She was surprised he was here, actually. "All right," Elaine said to the assembly. "We must fight. But how? Where?"
"Large forces of Shadow Spawn have invaded three locations," Bryn said. "Caemlyn, Kandor, and Tarwyn's Gap. The Gap should not be abandoned, assuming our armies are enough to help Lord Mandragoran stabilize there. The likely result of our push there today will be the Shadow Spawn pulling back into the pass. Keeping the enemy plugged up there is an unsuitable task for the Malkieri heavy cavalry alone. Perhaps we would best send him some pike companies? If he continues to plug that breach, we can devote the majority of our forces to combat in Andor and Kandor."
Agilmar nodded.
"Yes, that should be viable if we give Dai Shan the proper support. But we cannot risk letting Shinar become overrun as Kandor was. If they push out of the gap, we are prepared for an extended battle," Lord Isar said. "Kandor's resistance and Lan's fight at the gap have given us the time we need. Our people are pulling into our fortresses. We can hold, even if we lose the gap."
"Brave words, Your Majesty," Gareth Bryn said. "But it would be best if we did not have to test the Shinarans in that way. Let us plan to hold the gap with whatever force it takes to do so."
"And Caemlyn?" Elaine asked. Iteralda nodded.
"An enemy force that deep behind our lines with a waygate to use for reinforcements? That is trouble."
"Early reports from this morning," Elaine said, "indicate they're staying put for the time being. They burned large quarters of the city but left other sections alone. And now that they have the city, the Trollocs have been set to work smothering the flames."
"They will have to leave eventually," Bryn said. "But it will be better if we can flush them out sooner, rather than later."
"Why not consider a siege?" Agilmar asked. "I think the bulk of our armies should go to Kandor. I would not let the Throne of Clouds and the Three Halls of Trade fall as did the Seven Towers."
"Kandor already has fallen," Prince Antal said softly.
The great captains looked at the eldest son of the Kandori queen. A tall man, he had a silent way about him. Now he spoke boldly.
"My mother fights for our country," he said, "but it is a fight of vengeance and redemption. Kandor burns, and it rips my heart to know it, but we cannot stop that. Give Andor your greatest attention. It is too tactically important to ignore, and I would not see another land fall as mine has."
The others nodded.
"Wise advice, Highness," Bashir said.
"Thank you."
"Also, do not forget Sheol Ghul," Ruark said from the periphery,
where he stood alongside Perrin, Samaiz Sedai, and several other Aiel chiefs. The great captains turned toward Ruark, as if having forgotten he was there.
"The Karakarn soon will assault Sheol Ghul," Ruark said. "He will need spears at his back when he does so."
"He will have them," Elaine said. "Though that means four battlefronts. Sheol Ghul, Tarwyn's Gap, Kandor, and Caemlyn."
"Let us focus on Caemlyn first," Iteralda said. "I don't like the idea of a siege there. We need to flush the Trollocs out. If we simply besiege them, it gives them more time to reinforce their numbers through that waygate. We have to take them out now, on our terms."
Agilmar nodded with a grunt, looking at the map of Caemlyn an aide had put on the table.
"Can we stanch that flow? Retake the waygate?"
"I've tried," Elaine said. This morning we sent three separate forces through a gateway into the basement with the waygate, but the shadow is prepared and entrenched. None of the forces returned. I don't know if we can take the waygate back, or even destroy it.
What if we tried from the other side? Agelmar asked.
The other side? Elaine asked. You mean from inside the ways? Agelmar nodded.
Nobody travels the ways, Iteralda said, aghast.
The Trollocs do, Agelmar said.
I've been through them, Perrin said, approaching the table. And I'm sorry, my lords, but I don't think that taking the waygate from the other side would work. From what I understand, we couldn't destroy it, even with the one power. And we couldn't hold it inside, not with the black wind in there. Our best choice is to somehow get those Trollocs out of Camelin and then hold this side of the waygate. If it is properly guarded, the Shadow would never be able to use it against us.
Very well, Elaine said. We will consider other options. Though it occurs to me that we should send to the Black Tower for their Ashaman also. How many are there?
Perrin cleared his throat. I think you might want to be careful about that place, Your Majesty. Something's going on there.
Elaine frowned. Something?
I don't know, Perrin said. I spoke to Rand about it, and he was worried and said he was going to investigate. Anyway, just be careful.
I'm always careful, Elaine said absently. So how do we get those Trollocs out of Camelin?
Perhaps we can hide a large assault force in Braem Wood. It's here, almost 50 leagues north of Camelin.
Bryn pointed at the map.
If a smaller company of soldiers were to go up to the city gates and get the Trollocs to chase them back to the wood as bait in the trap, I always worried that an invading army would use the wood for cover as a base for attacking the city. I never thought I'd be considering the same option myself.
Interesting, Agelmar said, studying a map of the terrain around Camelin. That seems like a solid prospect.
But what of Kandor? Bashir asked. The prince is right that the country is beyond rescue, but we cannot simply let the Trollocs pour out into other lands.
Iteralda scratched at his chin.
This entire matter is going to be difficult. 3 Trolloc armies, with us forced to divide our attention between them. Yes, more and more I realize that the right move is to focus on one of them and set delaying forces against the other 2.
The Shadow's army at Camelin is likely the smallest, Agelmar said, as the size of the waygate has restricted their entry into the city.
Yes, Bashir agreed. Our chance for a quick victory on one of the battlefronts is best at Camelin. We should strike hard there with the largest of our assault forces. If we can win in Andor, it will reduce the number of fronts we have to fight on, and that will be extremely advantageous.
Yes, Elaine said. We reinforce Lan, but tell him that his job will be to hold there as long as he can. We place a second force at the border of Kandor with the purpose of delaying there as well, perhaps a slow withdrawal, as conditions dictate. While those 2 fronts are held, we can focus our true attention and our largest army at breaking the Trollocs in Camelin.
Good, Agelmar said. I like it. But what force do we place in Kandor? What army can slow the Trollocs, but won't require a large commitment of troops?
The White Tower? Elaine asked. If we send the Aes Sedai to Kandor, they can slow the Trollocs' advance across the border. That will let the rest of us concentrate on Camelin.
Yes, Bryn said. I like it.
And what of the 4th battlefront?
Iteralda asked. Shael Ghul? Does anyone know what the Lord Dragon plans there?
Nobody spoke.
The Aiel will see to his needs, Amys said from beside the clan chiefs. You needn't worry about us. Make your battle plans, and we will make ours.
No, Elaine said. Elaine, Avienda said. This is precisely what Rand wished to avoid, Elaine said forcefully.
The Aiel will work with the rest of us. The battle at Sheol Ghul could be the most important of all. I won't have one group presuming to keep to themselves and fight alone. You'll accept our help.
And, she added to herself, our direction. The Aiel were excellent warriors, but there were some things they just wouldn't admit. The usefulness of cavalry, for one. The Aiel obviously did not like the prospect of Wetlander command. They bristled, eyes narrowing.
The Aiel are excellent irregulars, Bryn said, looking to them. I faced you on the Bloodsnow, and I know how deadly you can be. However, if the Lord Dragon attacks Sheol Ghul, we will likely need to seize the valley and then hold it for as long as it takes him to battle with the Dark One. I don't know how long that will take, but it could take hours, days. Tell me, have you ever had to entrench and fight a protracted defensive war?
We will do what needs to be done, Ruark said.
Ruark, Elaine said, you yourselves insisted on signing the Dragon's Peace. You yourselves insisted that you be part of our coalition. I expect you to live up to your word. You will do as you are told.
Bryn's and Aitaralda's questions had set them off, but being told directly what to do made them back down. Ruark nodded.
Of course, he said. I have to.
Meet it by listening, Elaine said, and offering your opinion. If we're going to fight on four different fronts at once, we'll need a lot of coordination.
She looked at the gathered generals. It occurs to me, we have four battle fronts, and four great captains.
Bashir nodded. No coincidence, that.
Well, it might be one.
There are no coincidences, Highness, Bashir said. If I've learned one thing traveling with the Lord Dragon, that is it. Four of us, four battle fronts. We each take one, with Queen Elaine coordinating among us and overseeing the war effort as a whole.
I will go to the Malkyrie, Agelmar said. Most of the Borderlanders fight there now.
What of Kandor? Elaine said.
If the Aes Sedai are to fight there, Bryn said, so will I. My place is with the White Tower.
He doesn't want to fight in Andor, Elaine thought. He doesn't want to fight alongside me. He wishes the break to be clean. Who comes to Andor with me, then?
I'll go, Bashir said.
And I to Sheol Ghul, then, Aitaralda said, nodding. To fight alongside Aiel. A day I never thought I'd see, in truth.
Good, Elaine said, pulling over a chair. Then let's dig into the thick of it and get to details. We need a central location for me to work from, and Caemlyn is lost. For now I will use Merilor. It is central and has plenty of room to move troops and supplies around in. Perrin, do you think you could take charge of the logistics of this camp? Set up a traveling ground and organize the channelers to help with communications and supply operations?
Perrin nodded.
The rest of you, she said. Let's get to dividing the forces in detail and fleshing out the plans. We need a firm idea of how we are going to push those Trollocs out of Caemlyn, so we can fight them on even ground.
Hours later, Elaine stepped from the pavilion, her mind spinning with details of tactics, supply needs, and troop placements. When she blinked, she could see maps in her mind's eye, covered with Gareth Bryn's cramped notations. The others from the meeting began trailing away to their separate camps to begin executing their battle plans. The dimming sky had required lanterns to be set up around the pavilion. She vaguely remembered both lunch and dinner being brought to the meeting. She'd eaten, hadn't she? There had simply been so much to do. She nodded to those rulers who passed her, giving farewells. Most of the initial planning details had been worked out. On the morrow, Elaine would take her troops to Andor and begin the first leg of the counterattack against the Shadow. The ground here was now soft and springy with deep green grass.
Rand's influence lingered, though he had departed. As Elaine inspected those towering trees, Gareth Bryn stepped up beside her. She turned, surprised he hadn't left the pavilion already. The only ones still here now were the servants and Elaine's guards.
"Lord Bryn?" she asked.
"I just wanted to say that I'm proud," Bryn told her softly. "You did well in there."
"I had hardly anything to add."
"You added leadership," Bryn said. "You aren't a general, Elaine, and nobody expects you to be one. But when Tenobia complained about Saldea being left exposed, you were the one who diverted her back to what matters. Tensions are high, but you kept us together, smoothed over bad feelings, prevented us from snapping at one another. Good work, Your Majesty. Very good work."
She grinned. Light, but it was hard not to positively beam at his words. He wasn't her father, but in many ways he was as close to one as she had. "Thank you. And Bryn, the Crown apologizes for..."
"Not a word of that," he said. "The wheel weaves as it wills. I don't blame Andor for what happened to me."
He hesitated.
"I'm still going to fight together with the White Tower, Elaine."
"I understand."
He bowed to her and strode off toward Egwene's section of camp. Birgitta stepped up to Elaine.
"Back to our camp, then?" the woman asked. Elaine hesitated, hearing something. A faint sound, yet somehow deep and powerful. She frowned, walking toward it, holding up a hand to still Birgitta as she started to ask what was happening. The two of them rounded the pavilion, crossing green grass and blossoming morning's breath, walking toward the sound, which grew stronger and stronger. A song, a beautiful song, unlike any she had ever heard, that made her tremble with its striking sonority. It washed over her, enveloped her, vibrated through her. A joyful song, a song of awe and wonder, though she could not understand the words. She approached a group of towering creatures, like trees themselves, standing with their hands on the gnarled trunks of the trees Rand had grown, their eyes closed. 3 dozen Ogier of various ages, from those with eyebrows as white as new snow to those as young as loyal. He stood there with them, a smile raising the sides of his mouth as he sang. Perrin, arms folded, stood nearby with his wife.
"Your talk of going to the Ashaman had me thinking. If we need allies, what about the Ogier? I was going to see if I could find Loyal, but before I could set out, I found them already here among these trees."
Elaine nodded, listening to the Ogier song reach its climax, then fade, the Ogier bowing their heads. For a moment, all was peaceful. Finally, an ancient Ogier opened his eyes and turned toward Elaine. His white beard reached low on his chest, below the white mustaches that drooped on either side of his mouth. He stepped forward, other ancients, both male and female, joining him. With them came Loyal.
"You are the queen," the ancient Ogier said, bowing to her. "The one who leads this journey. I am Haman, son of Dahl, son of Morel. We have come to lend our axes to your fight."
"I am pleased," Elaine said, nodding to him. 3 dozen Ogier will add strength to our battle."
3 dozen, young one?"
Haman laughed a rumbling laugh.
"The great stump did not meet. Did not debate this long time to send you 3 dozen of our numbers. The Ogier will fight alongside humans. All of us. Every one of us who can hold an axe or long knife."
"Wonderful,"
Elaine said. I will put you to good use. An older Ogier woman shook her head.
So hasty, so quick. Know this, young one. There were some who would have abandoned you and the world to the shadow.
Elaine blinked in shock. You would have actually done it? Just left us alone? To fight?
Some argued for it,
Haman said.
I myself took that position, the woman said. I made the argument, though I did not truly believe it was right.
What?
Loyal asked, stumbling forward. This seemed news to him.
You didn't?
The woman looked to him.
Trees will not grow if the Dark One claims this world.
Loyal looked surprised.
But why did you? An argument must have opposition if it is to prove itself, my son, she said. One who argues truly learns the depth of his commitment through adversity. Did you not learn that trees grow roots most strongly when winds blow through them?
She shook her head, though she did seem fond.
That is not to say you should have left the steading when you did. Not alone. Fortunately, that has been taken care of.
Taken care of? Perrin asked.
Loyal blushed.
Well, you see, Perrin, I am married now.
You didn't mention this earlier.
Everything has come so quickly. I am married to Aerith, though, you see. She's just over there. Did you hear her singing? Isn't her song beautiful? Being married is not so bad, Perrin. Why didn't you tell me it was not so bad? I think I'm rather fond of it.
I am pleased for you, Loyal, Elaine cut in. Ogier could talk quite long on tangents if one was not careful. And thankful to all of you for joining us.
It is worth the price, perhaps,
Haman said.
Just to see these trees. In all my life, men have only cut great trees to see someone growing them instead. We made the correct decision. Yes, yes, we did. The others will need to see this.
Loyal waved to Perrin, apparently wanting to catch up. Allow me to borrow him for a moment, Loyal, Elaine said, steering Perrin toward the center of the grove. Fael and Birgitta joined her, and Loyal waited behind. He seemed distracted by the mighty trees.
I have a duty I want to assign you, Elaine said softly to Perrin. Losing Camelin threatens to send our armies into a supply crisis. Despite complaints of food prices, we had been keeping everyone fed, as well as accumulating stores for the battle ahead. Those stores are now gone.
What of Kyrian?
Perrin asked. It still has some food, Elaine said. As do the White Tower and Tyr. Bairlon has good supplies of metals and powder. I need to find what we can draw from the other nations and discover their food situation. It will be a massive task to coordinate stores and rations for all the armies. I'd like one person in charge of it all.
You were thinking of me?
Perrin said. Yes.
I'm sorry,
Perrin said.
Elaine, Rand needs me.
Rand needs us all.
He needs me more,
Perrin said.
Min saw it, he said. Without me at the last battle, he'll die. Besides, I have a few fights to finish.
I'll do it, Fael said. Elaine turned toward her, frowning.
It is my duty to manage the affairs of my husband's army, Fail said. You are his liege, lady, your majesty, so your needs are his needs. If Andor is to command the last battle, then the two rivers will see it fed. Give me access to gateways large enough for wagons to drive through. Give me troops to protect my movements. And give me access to the quartermaster records of anyone I want. I will see it done. It was logical and rational, but not what Elaine needed. How far did she trust this woman? Fail had proven herself deft at politics. That was useful. But did she really consider herself part of Andor? Elaine studied the woman.
There is nobody better you can trust with this task, Elaine,
Perrin said.
Fail will see it done.
Perrin, Elaine said, there is a different matter involved in this. May we speak privately for a moment?
I'll just tell her what it is when we're done, Your Majesty,
Perrin said.
I don't keep secrets from my wife.
Fail smiled. Elaine eyed the two of them, then sighed softly. Egwene came to me during our battle preparations. There is a certain item of importance to the last battle that she needs to be delivered.
The Horn of Valir, Perrin said. You still have it, I hope.
We do, in the tower, hidden. We moved it from the strong room none too quickly. Last night that room was broken into. I know only because of certain wards we set. The Shadow knows we have the Horn, Perrin, and the Dark One's minions are looking for it. They can't use it. It's tied to Matt until he dies. But if the Shadow's minions can capture it, he can keep Matt from using it. Or worse, kill him, then blow it themselves. You want to mask moving it, Fail said. Using the supply runs to hide where you're taking it. We'd rather just give it to Matt straight out, Elaine said. But he can be difficult sometimes. I had hoped he would be here at this meeting.
He's in Abu Dhar, Perrin said, doing something with the Shanshan.
He told you? Elaine asked.
Not exactly,
Perrin said, looking uncomfortable.
We have some kind of connection. I sometimes see where he is and what he's doing.
That man, Elaine said, is never where he needs to be.
And yet, Perrin said, he always arrives there eventually.
The Shanshan are the enemy, Elaine said. Matt doesn't seem to understand that, considering what he's done. Light, I hope that man isn't putting himself in trouble somehow. I will do this, Fail said. I'll care for the Horn of Valir. I'll see it gets to Matt. Guard it. No offense to either of you, Elaine said, but I am hesitant to trust this to someone I don't know well. That is why I came to you, Perrin.
That's going to be a problem, Elaine, Perrin said. If they really are watching for the Horn, then they'll expect you and Egwene to give it to someone you know well. Choose Fail. There is nobody I trust more than her, but she won't be suspected, as she has no direct relationship with the White Tower.
Elaine nodded slowly. Very well. I'll send word to you on how it will be delivered. For now, begin running supplies to establish precedent. Too many people know about the Horn. After we give it to you, I will send 5 suspect envoys from the White Tower and seed the right rumors. We hope that the Shadow will assume the Horn is being carried by one of those envoys. I want it to be where nobody expects, at least until we can put it into Matrim's hands.
4 battlefronts, Lord Mandragoran, Bullen repeated. That's what the messengers are saying. Camlan, Shael Ghul, Kandor, and here. They want to try to bottle up the Trollocs here and in Kandor while trying hard to defeat those in Andor first. Lan grunted, guiding Mandob around the reeking heap of dead Trollocs.
The carcasses served as a bulwark, now that his five Ashaman had pushed them up into mounds like dark bloody hills before the blight, where the shadow spawn gathered. The stench was horrible, of course. Many of the guards he passed in his rounds had thrown sprig leaf onto their fires to cover up the smell. Evening approached, bringing its most dangerous hours. Fortunately, those black clouds above made nights so dark that Trollocs had trouble seeing anything. Dusk, however, was a time of strength to them, a time when the eyes of humans were hampered but the eyes of the shadow spawn were not. The power of the United Borderlander attack had pushed the Trollocs back toward the mouth of the gap. Lan was getting reinforced by the hour with pikemen and other foot to help him hold position. All in all, it looked far better here now than it had just a day before. Still grim, though. If what Bulan said was right, his army would be stationed here as a stalling force. That meant fewer troops for him than he would have liked. He could not fault the tactics presented, however. Lan passed into the area where the Shinaran lancers cared for their horses. A figure emerged from them and rode up beside Lan. King Isar was a compact man with a white topknot, recently arrived from the field of Marilor following a long day making battle plans. Lan began a horseback bow, but stopped as King Isar bowed to him.
"Your Majesty?"
Lan asked.
"Agulmar has brought his plans for this battlefront, Daishan," King Isar said, falling in beside him. "He would like to go over them with us. It is important that you are there. We fight beneath the banner of Malkir. We all agreed to it."
"Zenobia?" Lan asked, genuinely surprised.
"In her case, a little encouragement was required. She came around. I also have word that Queen Atheniella will leave Kandor and come here. The Borderlands fight together in this battle, and we do it with you at our head."
They rode on in the fading light, row upon row of lancers saluting Isar. The Shinarans were the finest heavy cavalry in the world, and they had fought and died upon these rocks countless times, defending the lush lands to the south.
"I will come," Lan agreed. "The weight of what you have given me feels like three mountains." "I know," Isar said. "But we shall follow you, Daishan. Until the sky is rent asunder, until the rocks split underfoot, and until the wheel itself stops turning. Or light send its blessing until every sword is favored with peace."
"What of Kandor? If the queen comes here, who will lead that battle?"
"The White Tower rides to fight the Shadowspawn there," Isar said. "You raised the Golden Crane. We were sworn to come to your aid, so we have."
He hesitated, and then his voice grew grim.
"Kandor is beyond recovery now, Daishan. The queen admits it. The White Tower's job is not to recover it, but to stop the Shadowspawn from taking more territory."
They turned and rode through the ranks of lancers. The men were required to spend dusk within a few paces of their mounts, and they made themselves busy caring for armor, weapons, and horses. Each man wore a long sword, sometimes two, strapped to his back, and all had maces and daggers at their belts. The Shinarans did not rely solely upon their lances. An enemy who thought to pin them without room to charge soon discovered that they could be very dangerous in close quarters. Most of the men wore yellow surcoats over their plate and mail, bearing the Black Hawk. They gave their salutes with stiff backs and serious faces. Indeed, the Shinarans were a serious people. Living in the borderlands did that. Lan hesitated, then spoke in a loud voice.
"Why do we mourn?"
The soldiers nearby turned toward him.
"Is this not what we have trained for?" Lan shouted. "Is this not our purpose? Our very lives? This war is not a thing to mourn. Other men may have been lax, but we have not been. We are prepared. So this is a time of glory. Let there be laughter. Let there be joy. Let us cheer the fallen and drink to our forefathers who taught us well. If you die on the morrow, awaiting your rebirth, be proud.
The last battle is upon us, and we are ready."
Lan wasn't sure exactly what had made him say it. His words inspired a round of, "Darshan, Darshan, forward the golden crane." He saw that some of the men were writing the speech down to pass among the other men.
"You do have the soul of a leader, Darshan," Isar said as they rode on. "It is not that," Lan said, eyes forward. "I cannot stand self-pity. Too many of the men looked as if they were preparing their own shrouds." "A drum with no head," Isar said softly, flicking his horse's reins. "A pump with no grip. A song with no voice. Still it is mine. Still it is mine."
Lan turned, frowning, but the king gave no explanation for the poem. If his people were a serious people, their king was more so. Isar had wounds deep within that he chose not to share. Lan did not fault him in this. Lan himself had done the same. Tonight, however, he caught Isar smiling as he considered whatever it was that had brought the poem to his lips.
"Was that an Asai of Riddingwood?" Lan asked.
Isar looked surprised.
"You have read Anasai's work?" "She was a favorite of Maureen Sedai. It sounded as though it might be hers." "Each of her poems was written as an elegy," Isar said. "This was for her father. She left instructions. It can be read, but should not be spoken out loud, except when it was right to do so. She did not explain when it would be right to do so."
They reached the war tents and dismounted. No sooner had they done so, however, than the horns of alarm began to sound. Both men reacted, and Lan unconsciously touched the sword on his hip.
"Let us go to Lord Agomar,"
Lan shouted as men began to yell and equipment to rattle.
"If you fight beneath my banner, then I will accept the role of leader gladly." "No hesitation at all?" Isar said. "What am I?" Lan asked, swinging into the saddle. "Some sheepherder from a forgotten village? I will do my duty. If men are foolish enough to put me in charge of them, I'll send them about theirs as well."
Isar nodded, then saluted, the corners of his mouth rising in another smile. Lan returned the salute, then galloped Mandarb through the center of the camp. The men at the outskirts were lighting bonfires. Ashaman had created gateways to one of the many dying forests in the south for soldiers to gather wood. If Lan had his way, those five channelers would never waste their strength killing Trollocs. They were far too useful otherwise. Narishma saluted Lan as he passed. Lan could not be certain that the great captains had chosen Borderlander Ashaman for him on purpose, but it seemed not to be a coincidence. He had at least one from each Borderlander nation, even one born to Malkieri parents.
"We fight together,"